Welcome to Faith Food Friday. I'm Christine White with the Village Square, and I want to welcome you to one whole hour of hope. I don't know about you, but I think we need it right now, and I'm very excited to be very hopeful today with all of you. So I know we have a fabulous program and discussion lined up with our wonderful God Squad, and I just want to thank you all for coming out. You've got some information about the Village Square and your tables. If you've never been, welcome. And for those of you who've been a million times, thank you for keeping coming back. We love having you. So thank you so much. And without further ado, our moderator today is going to be Father Tim. So I'm going to hand it over to him. Enjoy.
Hello. Hi, how you doing? Christine was just saying that we're like a bunch of cats trying to keep us all together, like herding cats. It's true about clergy. I'm Father Tim Holita. Welcome to Good Samaritan. Thank you to Pastor Betsy for letting us be here for Faith Food Friday as we talk about hope. I want to go down the line first and let everybody introduce themselves.
Jack Romberg, Rabbi at Temple Israel.
And I am Pastor Betsy Willett-Zierden, and I understand that you really missed me last month. They needed a woman's touch in this room on this panel, didn't they?
We missed you immensely.
Well, we're not going to get angry today, hopefully.
Father Tim, co-cathedral of St. Thomas More.
Josh Hall, associate pastor at First Baptist Church.
And I'm Derek McGee, pastor of Bible-based church.
All right. So today is about hope. And as Christine said, we need a lot. Are you all excited that this election will... hopefully, God willing, be over on Tuesday? Are we excited? Can we get amen? Okay. So, I know I'm excited. It's been interesting, all right? Very interesting, maybe one of the more interesting ones. But we're going to talk, you know, I really want to encourage all of us. I really don't want to hear any stumping today. Let's not talk about any of the candidates. And I invite my colleagues and also the audience... the audience as well to participate in that. Because the fact is, folks, that, you know, at the end of the day, we're not... people would gin up support and say that this is the most important election ever. Well, is it, you know? Is it more important than Abraham Lincoln being elected? Is it more important than FDR being elected? It may be, right? I don't know the future, though. And if someone does, that'd be great. Come tell me when to buy and sell stock or what lotto numbers are going to happen. But we don't know what's going to happen. But I do suspect that this is not the most important election in the history of the world. That's just my own belief. And so there's something deeper, and there's something maybe more important, and there's something that underlies and unites us as Americans. So we're talking about hope. If you've seen the movie Princess Bride,
yes,
right?
Yes.
You remember the scene with the criminal Vizini? He keeps using the word inconceivable, and Inigo at one point says to him, "You keep on saying that word. I do not think you know what it... I don't think it means what you think it means," right? So we say hope all the time, but what does it mean? What does it really mean? Macy's, the last couple years, has had on their bags, believe. Well, believe in what? There's a Morgan & Morgan sign on the road I've seen. It says the same thing, believe. Believe in what? Eddie Bauer had a catalog during Christmas, "We Believe." What does that mean? Is this empty? When we say things like hope, what do we mean? So I want to start by asking the panel, and for all of you really to reflect on in your own hearts, but the panel just going down the line, what does hope mean? What does it mean in your context of your faith and your background?
Well, I think it's significant that the national anthem of Israel is named HaTikvah, which literally means the hope. And hope in Judaism is the recognition that no matter how bad things can look, and believe me, our history has some moments that look pretty bad, but even in the highest times of oppression and the highest times of despair, we are to have hope. We are to have hope, to understand that we can make things better and we can get things better. And so I think the fact that, you know, Israel, having, you know, the formation of Israel comes at a time in the government and everything was really set in the 1930s. It wasn't officially recognized until 1948. But that Israel in that time in the 1930s, when the largest oppression of Jews ever from Nazi Germany is happening, that they would choose the national anthem titled The Hope. And that just says it all.
The Cubs, anybody see that game? At the end, they were interviewing Rizzo, and he was telling them what happened in the 18-minute rain delay, that there was an amazing pep talk, if you will. But he was saying that, is it Hayward or Hayworth?
Hayward.
Hayward. Hayward Jason. Went in and spoke to the team and reminded them who they are, where they were headed, how hard they had worked, and what they were going to accomplish together. And then Rizzo says this, the boys believed, and we won. So when you say, what does belief mean and what does hope mean, I think for Christians, we believe that our lives are hidden in Christ. We believe that we have a destiny and we have a identity, and that regardless of the things happening around us, if we remain connected to who we truly are, and we believe that we can make a difference in this world as we partner with God, then we have a reason to get up in the morning. And if you have a reason to get up in the morning, then you have hope.
Oh, you're skipping. I forgot. You didn't play that moderator card.
I'm a moderator, yeah.
Someone did that last time, too, every now and then. But I to echo what Betsy was saying, I think for the Christian, our hope is ultimately grounded in Christ. I think when you talk about belief and hope, and I think of faith the same way, that, you know, faith in and of itself is no more valuable than the object of that faith. Trust is no more, trust as its own entity doesn't matter. It's is the one in whom you trust worthy of that trust. And so when you have hope, you're placing your hope in someone or something, and that hope itself, as sincere as it may be, it's no more valuable than the person or the thing in whom you've placed your hope. And so I think of Paul's words in 1 Thessalonians 4, where he says, even when facing the death of loved ones, that we shouldn't grieve like those who have no hope. And so Paul says the only reason we have hope is because Jesus died and was raised from the dead, so we don't have to fear death. So for me, hope is found in Christ.
I would say ditto to what you said. I also think hope is the belief that mankind can dwell together without being concerned about the skin color. And I think from an African American standpoint, when I consider what my ancestors have endured and now the life that I live, my hope is encouraged because I am now living out what my forefathers fought for. And so, you know, hope is the ability that my kids can continue to dwell further. And truth be told, hope never came into question until this this election season. And we're not talking about the candidates, but when you start thinking about the things that we were hearing before that, it never was even a conversation about what I believe and what I hope and those fear factors. And so I think the hope is just a continuance that mankind can dwell together and desire greater. But that's rooted in what I believe in, which is what my colleagues have already shared.
I looked it up. What's the definition of hope, just from a dictionary point of view? And it said a desire or an expectation that something will happen. And many times people, I tease my mom who's here actually, and we're watching FSU and we're losing, and I'm like, oh, and I'm not going to repeat what I'm saying because it's not appropriate. And she'll say, you got to believe, you got to hope. Well, I'm always like, Mom, they may lose, right? What am I hoping in? I don't know what to hope in. So the thing is, to be an optimist, for example, sometimes I have people say this to me, I'm an optimist or I'm a pessimist. To me, it makes no sense. There's no reason to believe that things will get better, is there? Is there a reason to believe that things will get worse? That's the question. So if you have hope, has anyone ever promised you something? And if so, or if not, why do you expect something? Who wants to go?
I'm not sure I get the question.
Are you setting us up? That sounds like a setup.
I hope that's not a setup.
Well, I think as people of faith, I mean, I'll say it again. Has anyone promised you something? And I mean, you know, the Lord or God or your faith, why do you hope? Because things, we can say nice things about it. I believe that humans can work. Why do we believe that? Why do we expect? Why do we have an expectation that things can get better? Why aren't we walking around depressed right now? Why do we have hope? Where does it come from?
I have faith in God, but my hope is that humans look at what we've just gone through and look at, I think, the despair that people on all sides are feeling. And my hope is that maybe recognizing everybody's despair may open our hearts a little bit to each other. That would be my hope. I just, there's a lot of Hasidic Jewish teachings that go something like this, that if somebody comes to you with a need, that they are in need of food, they are in need of help or aid in some way, the answer is not to send them to God to pray, but to act as if there is no God and intervene on their behalf. And so my hope is that when we are done with all this nonsense, that we reach out to each other and help each other.
Today, the New York Times had a column.
Yay!
It was written by the Dalai Lama and another fellow. I don't remember his name. But it was talking about why are some of the wealthiest nations in the world so angry and bitter and hopeless. And the point of the article was exactly what you just said. He said, we need to have purpose, and our greatest purpose is to serve others. And every faith teaches that. Every single faith teaches that at some level, in some way. Our purpose is to help and serve others. And so in very wealthy nations, where it appears that all your neighbors have everything they need, and it appears that folks are not in great need, then we find ourselves sometimes not serving as readily or as easily or as often, and then hopelessness comes from that. I thought that was a really, really insightful. I've been to many different countries, as I'm sure most of you have, very poor countries on a variety of mission trips. And the level of joy I have found in villages that have nothing is just over the top. But they serve each other. They depend on each other. And I think we need to get back to that.
If I can chime in, I also believe that most persons, when they're asking you the question of hope, and this is not towards you, Tim, in the general context, they have their own definition of hope based on their own context. Betsy makes a great example, which I was sitting here thinking, because, you know, in a impoverished nation, their hope may be just for a meal that day. Here in the West, our hope could be built on a lot of materialistic things. Fact of the matter is part of that reason why you asked the question of has anybody ever promised you anything? And if so, you know, why do you hope? I think part of it is, number one, yes, I have been promised things. Secondly, it's because, you know, it's a belief in the person who made the promise. They will fulfill that. You want to have hope and confidence in mankind. And so maybe less about what they promised to give you and more about them living up to your belief that there is good in every person. But I also believe that for the person who's asking you, or the person who writes and says in a hopeless nation, the way they define hopelessness may not be the context by which I see things. Because for me, you know, again, I mentioned aforementioned about, you know, from a personal standpoint, the things that make me hopeful and what hope I get aren't in the things that I drive and the clothes that I wear. It's on looking at the struggle that I watched my ancestors, meaning my grandparents and my parents, go through. I can't relate to those anymore because my life is better through their sacrifice. And I'm also hopeful because my kids are now starting out on a different playing field than I started out on. And so, you know, it's in that regard. But also the hope of, of the possibilities that others will have that same thing. And so when you're in the fight and you're in the struggle, that fight and the struggle for a hope, you can use President Obama when he came out and he talked about change. You know, he was talking about in a context of something that was at that time desired. Now, some will argue that we haven't seen that change. That's a different conversation. The fact of the matter was when he said it, it resonated during that time. I believe for us is my hope is that we can dwell together and continue to dwell together. And as Jack said, the last forum, no matter what happens on Tuesday, ladies and gentlemen, Wednesday comes. And so that's the most important thing to realize is no matter what happens on Tuesday, when Wednesday comes, how do I view Wednesday and beyond that? And I think that is what should be our motivation.
Going back to your question, I think it's, as far as promised versus fulfilled, and why do we hope? Because it's—I feel like that's what you're really getting at. Like, well, what reason do we have for hope? Yeah. And so, I think that's where by hope do we mean on one end of the spectrum wishful thinking, or do we mean confident expectation? You know, and so if we just mean wishful thinking, then that's that leap of faith. You know, take the step and just kind of close your eyes and hope it all works out. Confident expectation is I have a reason to have this hope. I have some experience that I'm building on, and that is what's giving me hope. And so example I think of is when David was going to face Goliath. This is one of my favorite ones that I share with the kids. Why was he confident? Why did he have hope that he could defeat Goliath? And it had nothing to do with him. He said, the same God that helped me to defeat the lion and the bear will help me with this. He had some experience that he was basing his confident expectation on. And so based on that, he said, God was faithful then. He's going to be faithful with this uncircumcised Philistine. Like, this will be a piece of cake. And so I think that's the difference versus someone, if, let's say, David had zero experience and coming in cold, and he's just kind of like, I don't know. I hope it all works out. Let's go find out. Me and this, you know, 9-foot soldier, you know, that, I guess that would be, what do we mean by, which end of the spectrum are we talking about with hope?
Can I add something in, Tim?
Sure.
I want to offer a source of hope, something that gives me a reason for hope, that will appeal, I hope, to everyone in the room, whether or not you are a faith, whether you believe in God or not. What acts as a source for hope for me is the relationships that we have formed up here. And I want everybody to think about this. From the moment we formed this group, and it started with Fran, of course, from First Baptist, then Bill Scheel, and now you, Josh, and it doesn't matter which one was sitting in the chair that represents First Baptist, but all of us really different. Really different backgrounds. But because of our working together, despite that we have some very different opinions and views on things at various points, I know I really care about what happens to everyone up here. And I am there for them. And I know that everybody up here is there for me. If we can do that through forming relationship, then everybody in this room can do the same. Everybody. I don't care who you're voting for. I don't care what political party you are. Everybody here is human. Everybody here is an American. And if you can grab on to those core things and say, I'm going to put my own ego back just a notch, then you can form the basis of that caring. There's my source of hope.
Thank you, Jack. I want you to, just for a moment, and I'll share my own reason for my hope in a moment, but I put aside for a moment anything, whatever your thoughts are about our president, because I'm glad that Derek brought him up. If you remember in 2008, that was the slogan, right? It was hope and change, but hope. And it was beautiful. People were excited, right? You know, it played to people's emotions and their desires, and there was all this hope, and there was all this, wow, there's something, we're on the cusp of something great here, you know? And, well, and you can blame whoever. It doesn't matter. That's not the point. You can blame the Republicans or blame President Obama or whatever. Regardless, 8 years later, we're, at least as a country, emotionally and at war with each other even more so, right? So that's what I mean. Like, in spite of that, what gives me hope is that my ultimate meaning and the ultimate meaning of my existence and where I will end up is not at the mercy of physical laws in this universe or human beings, but is at the mercy of God. And because of the promises that he's made to me, and because I believe in Jesus Christ, is the source of my hope. That when someone loses their job, or I can look at somebody with a brain tumor who's dying, as I did yesterday, and when they say, what's going to happen? Then I don't have to lie to them. I can say it's going to be okay. And that's not just believe, and that's not just hope, and that's not just united we stand or something. But it's actually rooted in something that I believe happened in history. So that's where my hope comes from. I would like to ask now, because we all have hope, which is awesome, which is great. Are we all in agreement? We're having positive times today, man, you know? Y'all, we all need a lift up, right? Am I right? A little pick-me-up? We're going to be serving drinks in a little bit, okay? So I want to know what your signs, maybe not for you, Josh. Yeah, okay.
I'll watch.
Okay. It's great being a Catholic, I got to tell you. Signs of hope. Let's look at that. What are the signs of hope? I have a few. Reflect on that. What are the signs of hope? Jackie shared one about our relationship. So what, looking out in the, even in the politics, even whatever you want to look at, what are signs of hope for you that things are going to get better, that we have a reason to expect that things will improve no matter what?
Again, in the newspaper today, it said that more people are working. There is more new jobs that were created this month than in many, many, many years. That's hopeful. And we don't hear that. That's not on the front of the front page. That was like buried in the back page on the bottom somewhere. So I think that's a sign of hope. I find myself looking for signs of hope, and when I begin to look for them, they're everywhere. They're just everywhere. Tonight, our confirmation class will be at your service. That's an example of hope. We have, I think, 10 or 12 young kids, 12, 13-year-olds, that are going to be confirmed in the faith and as part of our confirmation class. We've called them to service, so they've had to serve in the homeless shelter and serve in various different places. And they had to learn about the history of their own faith, and tonight they'll be worshiping with you. That's hopeful.
You
I'm not.
Oh.
Well, maybe I will, but here's another thing that's hopeful. Speaking of signs, tonight in this space and the tables you're sitting at will be mostly all men. I'm going to be opening the evening because I'm the pastor of this church, even though some of the churches that are going to be represented here would not ordain or even allow for a female pastor, and that's okay. They're all going to come together. Derek's going to be here. I think we have 100 men from 6 different churches. 4 of those are African-American churches, and they're coming together for a men's conference. That's hopeful. I could go on, but I'll take up everybody's time.
Good. Well, Bessie stole my thunder on that last one. Yeah. But that's a great example, though, because it started, and the great thing is when we've been planning these meetings, and kudos to Justin and to her, thank you so much, because in these meetings, it has been multicultural men in there desiring the same outcome. And I think that's a great example of hope. I'll give you, for me, so I bore my heart out at Temple Israel at our initial one, and people have come up to me since then, as recently as today, on how it impacted them. And I didn't do it for that. I really did it pouring out my heart. But what's great and is hopeful about it is the impact it's played on people, and it requires all of us to look at ourselves and the clarion call out of it all. I think that plays that's a great sign of hope in that regard, that we can come in here, and it's not one of those things when you come in, you know, black sitting to black and whites up front, none of that. So those are the things that I look at for hope, is that when it's all said and done, I no longer have to cross the street in that regard. But to go a little further than that is I'll go back to something that happened that really has just changed
and really catapulted my ministry was several years ago, my good friend Jack Romberg invited me to Temple to be the Friday evening speaker, and went and had a glorious time and grateful for it. But that's something that to me is like, wow. Wow.
We're trying to get a time to get you back, by the way.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But Betsy mentioned about women. Those type of things I think are hopeful, but the bare minimum is a lot of my stuff come out of watching my kids. When I drop them off at school, you know, my kids' friends, you know, when you're in elementary school, everybody's your friend. But my kids' friends all don't look like them. But when they play genuinely with each other, and they care genuinely about each other. And it lets me know that you know, anything that comes out of that in a negativity is a learned behavior, not an innate behavior. But those things are hopeful because for my son, preparing for his 11th birthday, he wants to invite friends to do something, and the list and the looks are different. But those are signs to me, again, of hope and of excitement in those regards. And it's encouraging because when you look around and you consider it, I'm very hopeful about this evening and who's going to be there and different worship styles, different churches all coming together again for the common core. And I think that's the main thing. When we get all the way down to the root of what the outcome is, we all really want the same thing. And I think those things are what keeps hope going, but also being a part of the conversation and being part of the movement to push and keep people focused on that. Again, I go back to, you know, November 9th. I mean, that by itself, we will all wake up that day and have to ask ourselves, what will I do to be a part of the next? And so, don't you, Josh?
All right. Well, I can't believe this is coming out of my mouth because I feel like I'm about to cue up the Whitney Houston music. But you said it first, so I don't feel as cheesy. But really, when some of you know where I'm going with this. But when I look at the children, when I look at kids, when I look at my kids and just what they're doing, seeing their friendships, their relationships, and then I back up and look at not even just my generation, but my dad's generation or my grandparents' generation, and just see where they're able to be now and just how blessed they are. But even just the families that we're able to be close and friends with, that gives me hope for them and their future, that they're getting a little bit of a cleaner slate to start with than maybe some previous generations have had. Just this, each generation has its own struggles. Each generation has its own things that it has to fight for and to overcome. And so hopefully we're whittling that list down a generation at a time.
And because you keep speaking of generations, I want to tell you another sign of hope. Of Sunday, I was away, had a day off, and we have a young woman preacher. Her name is Janya. She's 26, and she chose to preach from Habakkuk. And the text was, he's despairing, and he cries out to God, and God says, write down the vision, write it clearly, and then wait for it. And we have a podcast if you'd like to hear her sermon, but basically she was talking to most of the people in the room, which were all older than her, other than the children, and she's saying, you guys, stop despairing. Look at me. There's such hope. And I see a lot of hope in our young clergy. There are people going into ministry still. That's pretty amazing in itself. There's a decline in the church. We hear all about that. You know, the churches are losing numbers. And yet there are these people that I run into, and you do too. You had over 200 people at that retreat that you had for college students. We are designed by our Creator to love and care passionately about each other. And the way we find to do that may be varied, but that's the center of who we are. And I'm seeing hope a lot. Just look for it. Wait for it and look for it.
Expect it, right?
You Jenny sang the song Wait For It from Hamilton on Sunday.
So I'm going to read what I posted yesterday morning on Facebook. Tomorrow at Good Samaritan United Methodist Church at noon is our next Faith Food and Friday. The topic is hope. I will admit that I have been searching for something to really be hopeful about, to feel good about. I have found it in our national pastime, baseball. First, the narrative for this World Series was so marvelous. Two teams whose fans were starving and long-suffering for a world championship meeting,
So whoever won, the result was going to be very satisfying. Second, the beauty of the games played, the drama and tension, the clutch performances from both teams was just the diversion we needed in an awful political season. This need was further illustrated by the class of both teams, illustrated by the managers Joe Maddon and Terry Francona. Third, baseball has the ability to bring us together in a positive way, even when we are rooting for opposite teams. It reminds us that we are all Americans who, despite differences, can share many wonderful things. Folks, please remember this, whatever the results next week are. As a final thought, I am a big baseball lover, and make this observation. The great double play trio of the Cubs in their last World Series win was Tinker to Evers to Chance. Three great players, all of them white. This year, it was Russell to Baez to Rizzo, African-American to Hispanic to white. To me, this illustrates that despite different backgrounds, we can work as a team to do great things. May that inspire our country as well.
Amen.
Let's go ahead and turn it over to the audience. Prefer questions.
Hey, Tim, before we do that, Jack, at my church, when you did something like that, we would have said amen, my brother. Just let you know.
When can I come and preach at your church so
preach,
I can get those
brother,
amens?
Preach.
Yeah, I'm Jim Kress from First Baptist Church. I've attended both lectures of the Jewish Christian lecture series this week. And last night at St. John's, Dr. Wolf, on the faculty of Yale, considered one of the most preeminent living Christian theologists, was asked by Father Colleen, probably in anticipation of this discussion, what gave him hope. And he said it was the self-motivated acts of members of the faith community that benefited others. He said they're numerous, and that what gave him hope.
Come on, people.
We are hoping for questions.
Thank you. Well, I'm not sure this is a question, but I will share a thought with you all from the last 24 hours. I moderated a discussion at Capital City Youth Services last night on youth homelessness, and then a group of us slept outside, had cardboard boxes, and kind of really recognized the challenges and raised some money for the great work they're doing. And one of the first questions that was asked was just what does homelessness look like? And the group was really, you know, first starting with, you know, there's some fear, there's some mistrust, other things, but you just get over that. You just do something good. You can't solve the whole problem. And it is right in line with what all of you are saying. But what really struck me was a young man who worked there, we were just talking, and he just went right to the Village Square race relations conversation about a year ago. He's still thinking about it. So the conversation that this group had in a field behind Capital City Youth Services, the conversation we're having today, and that conversation, all of these different, I ended this with these conversations to some feel like we're not making progress. We're just here. We're just having a conversation. But it's huge. You all have referenced, you know, a couple months ago, Derek, what you said at Temple Israel. This is making a difference, and I'm starting to hear it from others. So I guess if I had any question, how can we push the envelope? We were talking about this at Temple after that day. And what else can we do as a community to keep pushing this? Because it is making a difference, and it feels pretty powerful.
I think, as you and I have discussed, Kristen, we have to get these conversations, like what happened at Temple a couple of months ago, and really also at First Baptist last month. I mean, both were hard conversations that were some real difficult things said that, and things that upset some people, but that's okay to feel upset. But I think we have to get these conversations into bigger and bigger venues so that they're heard by more and more people. And I think that a group like us, because of the relationships we have, can demonstrate to a larger crowd how you can have different perspectives and have a hard conversation and yet still come out with genuine love for each other. I mean, that's really what we have to be doing. You can't just pass a policy that's going to change somebody's heart. There is no law that you can make in Congress or in the legislature. There is no executive order that a governor or a president can sign that will change somebody's heart. The only way to change hearts is by talking, having real conversations about real issues, but do it in a way that in the end, people see that the participants are doing it out of genuine caring that we move our society forward, and that our first priority is not to hang on to our ideological purity, but to state our position and then listen to the other position so that we can perhaps understand each other more and hear each other more. There's so much. I mean, you know what? I'm going to bring a little something up.
Hold it.
Go, huh? Okay.
No. No candidates.
No.
And do it.
So here's the thing. If I were to look for a positive thing out of the candidates of this election, the positive thing is focus, and I'm thinking of one candidate in particular, I'm not naming anybody. There is a new focus on a group of people who have been ignored. There's a group of people, lower-end white-collar workers and blue-collar workers, who have lost their jobs or are in much worse jobs than they had before. Nobody is addressing their problems. And maybe the hope that comes out of this is that, yes, one candidate approaches them one way by stirring up certain emotions, and another candidate does something else. But what we have to do is acknowledge that there are people here who are hurting, who need to have their lives improved. And so rather than focusing on the political nonsense and rhetoric of the candidates, let's start talking about how we raise these people up, about how we really help them.
And I'll add on in this regard is... I agree with you. I think, you know, there are some who may feel like we're not making it, but here's the reality of it all. We never started Faith Food Friday as the mindset that we're going to be the savior of this. We just wanted to be a beacon. We wanted to at least create the conversation. And look, we're in year six in the conversation. I think the other part of keeping it going is, I think when we started doing the rotations, moving out of just First Baptist and the Temple, being a Good Samaritan this month, shameless plug at my church next month. But I think that's important because now you're taking it to a different context as well and a different audience in that regard. Another part of for me, and Commissioner Maddox came to the One Temple Israel and he pulled me aside afterwards and he asked me this question genuinely and sincerely, which I shared with him. And he said, Derek, how do we get more of us at these forums? And he and I engaged in a conversation. The more we have these, the more we have these conversations, and I come in, you know, excited about being at Faith Food Friday. But also, listen, I work in politics. I love fights. I love being challenged. I love challenging individuals. I really do, because here's the reality of it all is I can challenge Jack on political ideology and never becomes personal because we came in as friends. We'll leave as friends, and I think that's important. The brother sitting here has American Atheist shirt on the front. I'm a Christian. I'm not offended by his shirt, and when we leave out of here, I won't be offended because this context lets this play itself out. But I will say to you that when you look around, we are doing something, and if we discontinue Faithful Fridays, that's one less thing being done to keep the conversations going. And so I am encouraged, and it can become this. When you look at it holistically, you're like, wow, it's a big problem. But the fact of the matter is, no one individual, now in my faith, I believe in Jesus Christ, but by way of us in this room, none of us on our own accord can do anything by ourselves. We need other individuals. And so what we're doing here and other things that we find ourselves doing, we are just adding on to what's already being done in hopes of continuing to just chip off piece by piece by piece by piece. And I want to, and that's the encouragement. That's also the hope. That's the motivating factor in that regard. And I think it's important for us to realize that the contributing factor is what are we doing as individuals, and those individual acts become a corporate movement all in itself.
Hi. I have a question. What are things that cause you as clergy to feel hopeless? And if you've ever been in a truly hopeless place, what are things that you do to regain your hope?
That's a great question.
Well, Tracy knows that I've felt hopeless at times because she happens to be one of my prayer partners. And so she also knows that when I'm feeling especially hopeless, I reach out to people and ask them to pray for me. I spend time with God. I spend time alone. I meditate. Sometimes I drink a couple of extra glasses of wine with my friends, like Jack. I feel hopeless most often, though, or when I feel like I've let someone down. And that by letting them down, I have put a wedge between them and God. I probably am taking more responsibility than I need to, because God is bigger than me. And God can clearly breach any wedge that may have come through me, or something I've said, or something that a decision that the church has made. But yeah, I feel hopeless sometimes.
I'll answer the second question first. So prayer is very important to me. I don't do a lot of dumping on people. You know, I have the privilege, as others up here, to be, I also pastor my wife and kids, but also my family. And so I have to fight very hard to maintain family time, meaning my external family. When we get together, I don't want to talk about church. I don't want to talk about me as pastor. I want to just be Derek. And sometimes that becomes very hopeless, because, you know, everybody wants to continue in a church conversation. So sometimes it becomes hard. I exercise, things of that nature. But the moments where I feel hopeless is really when I'm around people who really just feel like, you know, their definition or their belief in what creates their peace of mind or their happiness is just unrealistic stuff. Because truth be told, you need things to happen for you to be happy. And sometimes what happens is people just become so consumed in that regard. Another part of what makes me really hopeless is I'm a reader of a lot of things. And sometimes to my own demise, like I read people's posts on social media sometimes in the comments. And I become, I don't know what the word beyond angry is, but it's like there are some people I feel like just their whole desire is to keep racial tension going. And I become hopeless because it's like, I feel something like I make one step forward and go back three or four. And I'm talking about within just African American. I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about within my own race. When you're trying to push it forward to whatever and it goes backwards. And those are hopeless at times. My wife always asks me, what's your greatest joy in ministry? And I always say salvation. And one of my, she said, what's your, you know, pain? And I say people. But here's what I mean by that. I love the people I pastor, but it seems like there are some people I pastor, their daily and weekly desire is to always dwell in that which is negative. And to the point where they just can't realize that, listen, you're breathing, people. Like, you're inhaling and exhaling. That right there is enough to be grateful for. And those things become hopeless, because it's like, man, and it's so taxing and it's so draining in that regard. And the last one, and just being very frank, I'm a frank speaking person, my greatest hopelessness from life and ministry standpoint is I don't have many friends in ministry, again, in my context, because in the context I'm in by way of a black clergy, there's way more competition among black clergy than partnership. And so it's lonely at times. And, you know, I didn't set out to be friends with Jack Romberg, but Jack Romberg reached out genuinely. We became friends. You know, when Bill Shill was here, he and I would get together all the time and have conversations. And I'm not saying this for sympathy. The fact of the matter is, it's lonely in ministry. It can be very lonely in ministry, and Bessie mentioned about reaching out to people. People that I usually talk to aren't clergy. They're absolutely not clergy, because for those individuals, you want people who just love you for Jack and Betsy and Tim and Josh and Derek. And as you ascend in certain areas of your life, you realize some people, their overall goal is just to leech off of you versus to invest in you. All of my friendships, I tell my friends, I don't want anything from you. I always want for you. And because I don't owe anybody anything, I can love you genuinely. And there's hopelessness at times, because it's like, man, dude, can I just, you know, is there anyone you can trust in this? But prayer always soothed me. Long showers. I'm a Lakers fan. When they lose, it like it adds on to the hopelessness. You know, it's just USC Trojan fan. They're losing. That's hopelessness. I'm getting hopeless thinking about it.
I've had two moments of absolute, you know, dark despair that felt hopeless. The one was when, just a few years into our marriage, we thought we could not have children. And the way we got through that was just the love that my wife and I had for each other, and our determination to see it through together and to have some sometimes difficult conversations together. And we did have children. We have two fabulous daughters and now three wonderful grandchildren. The second was when we decided to shut down our factory, okay, our business. We employed 60 people. It was providing an income to my parents, who were at that point retired, but we knew we had to let this go and to clean it up clean, as opposed to let it become a disaster. Imagine my feeling having to stand up in front of 60 employees and tell them that they were not going to have jobs. Imagine the feeling that I had of, you know, what am I doing to my parents? And what got me through that was my wife saying to me when I came home from our decision to close the business and sell off the business, is she looked at me and she said, well, now you can do what you've always wanted to do, which is this. And my belief that I could get from there to here, that was my ultimate calling, so to speak. I know that's not a Jewish word, but that's the appropriate word, I think. That got me through. And today, having been through two moments of despair, the lesson that I know is that no matter how awful something looks, I know I'm going to make it through.
We've talked a little bit about, you know, hope for everybody, to just, you know, say it's good in general for people to hope things. But I was wondering, what do you do if what you're hoping for and perhaps what somebody else is hoping for, those expectations are kind of at, you know, each other's ends. So, I mean, I guess the short question is, do you hope kind of as a principle, regardless of what they hope in? Or how do you handle when two people hope in, I guess, two different things?
Isn't that marriage counseling?
Do you still have a question?
I'm going to be the moderator, but when I close, I'm going to maybe kind of address that.
Okay. Oh, I was going to say, I think that we see that right now, right? That there's people hoping for one victor over another, whether it's Cubs and the Indians or, you know, in the election.
But those who shall not be named.
But I do believe that it all kind of goes back to the reality that we all have hope for good things in our lives and a good future for our children. We hope for the ability just to have our needs met. And I think there's always agreement because of our humanity, even if we're hoping for different things. If you live under the same roof, that might not work as well, but hopefully you're both hoping for a hot cup of coffee in the morning or something.
Let me just throw something out there, and I thought about this also with the question of hopelessness. I've mentioned this person before, but what gives me a lot of hope when I am discouraged? I mean, I'm over there ministering on FSU's campus, so it's not exactly. I was there this morning meeting with a student dressed like this, and you know, you might as well wear one of those horse head masks and walk around or something. I mean, everyone's you get a lot of looks, okay? They're not always, and people ignore you. They're like scared of you and stuff. So it's very unpleasant sometimes. I'm kind of used to it, you know.
Yeah, that was, yes. Halloween was Monday, bud. So the saints in the Catholic Church to me are tremendous examples of inspiration. And one of my favorites is St. Maximilian Kolbe, who was a priest. And he was caught sheltering Jewish people from the Nazis. And he was placed in the concentration camp at Auschwitz. When somebody had escaped, the Nazis, to punish all of the inhabitants of the camp, the prisoners, to punish them, to discourage people from escaping, picked out, I think, 10 or 12 random people, or went down the line and picked them out to be put into a starvation bunker, which is one of the worst ways that you could die. Okay, one of the men who was chosen was a Jewish man who was a family man, and he begged the Nazis to not take him because he had a family. And Maximilian Kolbe, a priest, stepped out and said, "Take me instead. I'll go in his place." And they asked, "Who are you?" And he said, "I'm a Catholic priest." And they put him in a starvation bunker with these other prisoners. And while they were down there, in the pits of absolute darkness and what seems like the triumph of evil, this man led them in prayer and in song. And the guards couldn't bear to look at his face when they went down there to check on them or remove one of the dead, because he was just glowing and radiant. Eventually, he was the last one standing, so to speak. They had to administer a poison to kill him. He wasn't dying, even though they were starving him. The Nazis are gone, but people remember him. And the man he saved was at his canonization with John Paul II. That, to me, is hope. The ultimate triumph of good over evil. And I think everybody can see that. I think even you can see that, right? I mean, that's one thing. I think all of us can see that there's something good there in the face of darkness, right? I mean, just in terms of, you don't have to be a believer to see the goodness in that is all I mean. No, of course, yeah.
This isn't a question to you. It's more of an observation on something that maybe Jack had said about the Cubs and the Indians. And we all know the number 108's been a big number and in so many different ways. So I was curious as to how Psalm 108 ended, and it says this: "Give us help from trouble, for the help of man is useless. Through God we will do valiantly, for it is he who shall tread down our enemies." I think that's a very interesting thing.
So let me give you another 108. The building that the Cubs broadcasts are done over is 108 stories tall. There are 108 stitches on a baseball. And if you spell Cubs in Hebrew, the numerical value of the letters totals up to 108.
Thank you.
Cleveland never had a chance, all right?
I would just add to that. In First Baptist,
can I hear an oy vey?
Really, you're objecting?
Let's just say something. I think your hope is very important, but I have a little bit of a problem with hope sometimes in the way it's used. Hope as an outlook, as an optimistic view, is wonderful. I mean, definitely beats the alternative. But hope, and sometimes prayer also, I think, are not used the right way by people. I think to sit around and pray for a better world, hope for a better world, hope for your friend who's unemployed to get a new job, isn't enough. You have to give the effort. You have to make it happen. Derek, like you, I'm a father, and I have a lot of hope for the future based on our kids. But I don't just sit around hoping that they'll be better. I help steer them in a better direction. So I think hope is wonderful, but it's the action that goes with it to make the world better. That's the important part of hope and prayer. And I'm trying to make it into a question, but I can't. Sorry.
So Brian, okay, you've heard me say this at synagogue, okay? And I know that the people from Temple Israel have heard me say this. So what is some of the essence of prayer? Maybe I've said this in this context, I don't remember. The Hebrew word for prayer is tefillah, right? And it's related to the word, it actually comes from the verb, lehitpalel, which we say to pray, but that's not actually what that verb means. the word that we say is to pray actually means in Hebrew to judge oneself. Prayer is a look inside to judge yourself, your relationship with the world around you, with other people. And so real deep prayer involves that.
Hi. In looking at what's been going on for the last few months, I see people from all sides of the political spectrum saying about the same thing, that they're totally disgusted with the scorched earth approach to our American politics now. And it seems to me that, there's some hope there. That is, if so many of us agree that this is disgusting, we've seen what we don't want. So I'm asking each of you to think about, or some of you, whatever, if you choose to respond. What, and a lot of this is rhetoric, we know that. And rhetoric builds actions and can be very destructive in itself. So what are we doing within our congregations to bring this to a point and get people to reduce the rhetoric and perhaps their actions also?
I'll just speak. The message, we have sort of a weekly newsletter within our church, and just a couple weeks ago, I sent out one following Father Tim's rule here, not naming any candidates, and we are a politically diverse church. But just reminding folks that this tension that a lot of folks feel in this election, I think, to me, it's been a reminder we should feel that tension every election. I think we've got an election this year where the flaws in each candidate almost seem exaggerated compared to what we've seen in the past. But I think in any election, we're tempted to put our hope in the person on the ballot and then just kind of gloss over any faults they might have. And the sooner that I can latch on the right candidate and then just, in effect, demonize the opposition instead of recognizing, yeah, I don't have a perfect candidate. You know, as far as I'm concerned, unless Jesus Christ is on the ballot, I'm not voting for a perfect candidate. And I don't think he's running for anything right now. But that sense of just that humility to recognize, okay, this is why I'm voting for this candidate. Flawed, imperfect, whatever, but for whatever motivation I have, policy, whatever else, here's why I'm voting for this candidate. And I don't have to go, to use your term, scorched earth on the opposition or anyone who thinks otherwise. I can assume goodwill that they also have their reasons for why they're voting what they're voting. And we probably principally disagree over some fundamental things, but I can still assume goodwill of them and how I speak of them and treat them, but I don't have to then act like my candidate is above reproach. And I think that's what you see played out. Unfortunately, unlike what you see modeled here, hopefully, I don't watch much news media, and this is one of the reasons why, because you just get polar opposite surrogates who can only keep repeating the same things again and again and just talking past each other and never acknowledging that's a legitimate point. Yes, he or she shouldn't have said or done that. So I think that's part of it, is just us being vulnerable enough to recognize, yeah, this isn't a perfect, easy decision, and people in good faith can come down differently, but you can still have convictions and you can still believe that you're doing what is right. But you can also assume goodwill of other people who, like Jack was saying earlier, might vote completely differently than you do. I think that's where a lot of it starts.
I want to go ahead and we'll wrap this up as we're approaching the end of our time. I read in a newspaper article recently online, a New York Times article, and it was called something to the effect of hungry, like two flat screens and hungry. And it was about the poor in America. And it was interesting. But something that struck me was this whole article, of course, its biases were there, but it talked about a young girl who had gotten pregnant when she was 13 by a 28-year-old man. And it lamented in the article that the problem was sex education and contraceptives began in high school, not in middle school. And that was, so in other words, alluding to the problem here being that the government hadn't started sex ed and giving out contraceptives to sixth graders. And I thought, this is completely missing the problem here of what about the fact that a 28-year-old, 13, is that not the issue? So, and I say that because we there's something, so this election, and I'll say something briefly. The candidates that we have are both, they both have positive qualities, if you can put aside our own, you know, ideologies. You have one that's served as an impressive resume, right? President's wife, Secretary of State, a United States Senator, has been involved all her life. And depending on your ideology, how you interpret her as a success or failure, you know, that's dependent on that. Another person who's seen as an outsider, who's seen as a successful business person. But neither of these people got to the place they're at because of their moral character, which has been emphasized. And so when I'm placed in a position, as I will be on Tuesday, to pick one or pick one of the others, it's like, you know, folks, I'll pick one. I'll pick somebody. But I also know that this is not even touching, just like sex ed and contraceptives, it's not touching the real problems that are in our country. And that gives me hope. Jesus said that, he looked out and he said, the harvest is abundant, but the laborers are few. And I still think the harvest is abundant because the same problems that ailed man and woman in Jesus' time are the same problems. All of us are still human. The same problems are still our longings, our desires, our hopes, our dreams are just as present now as they were in his time. And so the harvest is abundant. Echoing what this man said, the fact that you all are tired of it shows that. It proves that we're tired of this polarization and hatred and hostility. And so that's a sign of hope for me. It's a sign of hope that people come that don't even believe in God to listen to some clergy come here. I think that's interesting. It's a sign that this is my brothers and sisters that also have the same desires and hopes, right? That we're all together here, and I think that's beautiful. So my friends, that's what gives me hope, is that no matter how dark it gets, the light shines even brighter. Am I right? And so that's my hope, and my hope for you, and I hope that we've given you something to hope for, that no matter what happens on Tuesday, there's something bigger than politics. Amen? Thank you.